Sahanavavatu Sahanau Bhunaktu Sahavaryankaravavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, page 12. Verses 11 to 29, a detailed description of Ilavritavarsha. In verses 11 to 29, Srila Sukadev Goswami gives a detailed description of Jambudvipa's hindermost varsha, known as Ilavritavarsha. Ilavritavarsha is abundantly filled with auspicious mountains, trees, rivers, valuable metals, jewels, etc., and is enjoyed by the devatas who engage in sporting pastimes with their consorts. At the summit of Mount Meru, which is situated in the center of Ilavritavarsha, is Brahmapuri and eight surrounding townships that are utilized as the capital cities of the devatas who oversee and sanction various activities throughout the universe. Srila Sukadev Goswami continues.
So, can we say that Ilavritavarsha is for the antariksis or it's for the benedict?
It's one of those kind of everybody uses it, just we don't. But it appears that even if it's antariksha, it's here up, not antariksha that's below.
It's
Bhumandala. But it's just that over there it's nice enough that the ones that are above like to come there. But, yes. Yes. Yes, yes. Yeah. So it's Bhumandala, but it's it would be a heavenly part. So you have the heavenly planets, Swarga, but then you also have the what do you call it?
Bauma
Swarga and Bila Swarga. Right? Bila is what's below us. You know, like Sutala, where Bali Maharaj is, like that. So then. Or Bali Maharaj is. You know, so they're also heavenly planets, but that's for those who are more, you know, tend towards the Asuric side. Right? And then what's here is those that are, you know, not Asuric, but just have a little less power, you know, of piety left over. Yes. And then you have Swarga, means you have to have, you know, sufficient, how you say, piety to be there. So when that's less, not enough to be there, but more than what it is here, then they may be in those places. Right? And if they're Asuric, they don't go to the higher heavenly planets, they go to these lower heavenly planets. Does that make sense?
Yeah?
Yeah?
Cool.
Okay, yeah. Okay. At this, okay. Srila Sukadev Goswami continues. On the four sides of the great mountain known as Sumera are four mountains, Mandara, Meru Mandara, Suparshva, and Kumuda, which are like its belts. These are different from Gandamandana and Malayavan. They're inside.
Yes.
Okay, so those are inside these
they're
areas.
They're touching there.
Oh, okay, so they come off of there.
Falling.
Aha. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So it's
top heavy. So.
Doesn't tip over. Okay.
And what
means these four mountains are touching Meru.
Yeah.
Yes, this Mandara, Meru Mandara, Suparshva and Kumuda, which are like its belts. Its meaning Sumeru, not its meaning Ilavrita. Yeah.
Mandra was used to churn the ocean of milk. And its shape is, like its footprint is, it's long but narrow, so it makes a good churning paddle.
Oh, okay. Okay, so you get more...
it's just round.
It doesn't do much. Okay, yeah. Okay. So then they're like on the sides of men. But they must have their own top of their mountain. So yes, it's not that they're just reliefs. That they
there's a gap between the base of them and the base of them.
Okay.
It comes up.
Okay.
Stops it from toppling one side or the other.
Oh, okay. Somebody's got to do it.
Yeah.
Okay. The length and height of these mountains are calculated to be 10,000 yojanas, 80,000 miles. Standing like flagstaffs on the summits of these four mountains are a mango tree, a rose apple tree, a kadamba tree, and a banyan tree. Okay, so these are the trees that were mentioned before. The trees of no trees. Right? Those trees are calculated to have a width of 100 yojanas. And a height of 1,100 yojanas. One mountain, one tree. Yeah. Okay. Otherwise, not enough space. No. Ain't enough space on this mountain for the two of us, right? Their branches also spread to a radius of 1,100 yojanas. So that means that the width, when it means width, it means the trunk.
Uh-huh.
You get the idea. Because it says that it gives the width of it, meaning the trunk and then the height, but it also says the branches spread to that. So it's actually as high as it is wide in branches, but the trunk is 100 yojanas. So 800 mile tree. You're not going to get the scientists to appreciate this.
It's going to be an uphill battle.
Yeah.
They'll start to say things like, it's obviously a different sort of mile. Can't be the miles that we're referring to.
Yeah, it's more along the lines of like Davis or something. Omaraj Prikit, best of the Bharata dynasty. Between these four mountains are four huge lakes. The water of the first tastes just like milk, the water of the second like honey, and that of the third like sugarcane juice. The fourth lake is filled with pure water. So it's actually water, but it tastes like that.
Yeah.
Because when you have the oceans, they're actually milk and honey and this and that.
But these are...
The waves would be really slow on the honey, right? You know, really slow to arrive that way.
Yeah.
It tastes like honey, but not necessarily it looks like honey.
No, I get the idea that it's water, but it has the taste of honey.
Yeah.
You know, like if you put some honey in the water, then what it would taste like.
Mm-hmm.
But
Ekachakra, there's the pukua that the water is tastes like coconut juice.
Wow. That's fine.
At least it's mentioned.
Yeah.
Some pastime there of Nityananda.
Oh, and then just distributed to everybody? And
yes.
Okay, cool.
The celestial beings such as the Siddhas, Charanas, and Gandharvas, who are also known as demigods, enjoy the facilities of those four lakes. Consequently, they have the natural perfections of mystic yoga, such as the power to become smaller than the smallest or greater than the greatest. Footnote 6. Otherwise, the Devatas, who are much larger than us in size, would find it pretty cramped in such tight quarters. Ilavrita Varsh, as revealed in these verses and upcoming verses, is chock full of huge mountains, lakes, rivers, etc., that cover its entire surface, a great portion of which is occupied with the base of Mount Meru.
Is that Jagannath Kirtan who wrote this?
I'm not sure.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I think Charachandra.
He was just getting.
Doesn't sound like
Krishna's
operator.
No, right.
Chocolate.
Pretty cramped.
Chocolate. Chocolate chip full. Okay.
There are also four celestial gardens named Nandana, Chaitirata, Vibrajaka, and Sarvatobhadra. The best of the demigods, along with their wives, who are like ornaments of heavenly beauty, meet together and enjoy within those gardens, while their glories are sung by lesser demigods known as Gandharvas. So you have the Gandharvas, Charanas, and Siddhas, they come there to sport. But then also the main demigods come there, and then these demigods then are glorifying them. Mm-hmm. So it's a big place, because we see it's quite big in comparison. You know, Meru takes up a lot of it, but still, how big Bharatvarsha is, we're only a small portion of that. So it's plenty big enough, for everybody to hang out on. On the slopes of Mandara Mountain is a mango tree named Devachuta. It is 1,100 yojanas high. It seems to be a popular height for trees. Yeah. I mean, the trees have trees have their normal height, so that seems to be up there. Yeah, then 1,100 yojanas is the standard tree height.
How big are the demigods?
That I don't know. You get the idea that these are bigger than normal trees. Not that they're, because like Shiva sits under a tree. That's 600. I think it's 600 miles wide and 800 miles high. But they're regular size. It's just a big tree. So I'm sure they're bigger than us, but not necessarily that they're that big.
It said these four specific trees are standing like flagstaffs on the sun, to give some indication that it's some specialty.
Specialty, yeah. So it seems that of specialty trees, this is the recommended size, with the in size. Mangoes as big as mountain peaks and as sweet as nectar fall from the top of this tree for the enjoyment of the denizens of heaven. So they must have enough piety, they're not underneath when they fall. See, that's why they aren't here. Otherwise, you'd wipe out huge,
big problem.
Yeah, they would then, come up with a ruling, we got to cut down the tree, stuff like that. 11 to 16. In his commentary to text 16, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The size of the fruit is mentioned in the Vayu Purana. Arat ninam satyan satyas taveka shastyadikani cha phala pramanam akyatam rishibhis tatva darshivir. The sages, seers of truth, say that the dimension of the fruit is 861 aratnis, 861 times 1.5 feet, which is 1,291.5 feet. Like that.
So it's big.
Really big.
That's a good size.
I think it's one of the other fingers. Because I think the middle is hasta, and then I think it's maybe the next one or something like that. But it's one like that. We can check. It's there in the yajna. But the point is it's basically 1.5. Maybe it's a touch less. So we might be off here by a couple of feet.
Still big.
Yeah, still quite big.
Still solid size.
Yeah. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continues, when all those solid fruits fall from such a height, they break and the sweet fragrant juice within them flows out and becomes increasingly more fragrant as it mixes with other scents. That juice, so it appears that it just breaks, it doesn't smash to, completely nothing, all the demigods, not again, like that. Yeah, so it just falls and then cracks and then the juice flows out.
Sounds like a nice place.
Yeah. That juice cascades from the mountain in waterfalls and becomes a river called Arunoda, which flows pleasantly through the eastern side of Ilavrita. The pious wives of the Yakshas act as personal maidservants to assist Bhavani, the wife of Lord Shiva. Because they drink the water of the river Arunoda, their bodies become fragrant. And as the air carries away that fragrance, it perfumes the entire atmosphere for 80 miles around. Similarly, the fruits of the jambu tree, 80 miles, that means you could, if it was here, you could smell it in Calcutta.
Yeah,
yeah, that's serious. And it would smell good. It's a good thing that here, fragrance, so yeah, you can't smell it here. It doesn't go the other way. Yeah.
And that's the fragrance of their body.
Yeah. Yes, you can imagine how much the other is. Yeah.
Perhaps it was the same thing with the Chabaden, with
yes, 80 miles. That seems to also be the standard.
Standard for smelling good.
Good, good, good standard, yeah. If you smell good for 80 miles, then you smell good, right? Yeah. Then you're good. Similarly, the fruits of the jambu tree, which are full of pulp and have very small seeds, fall from a great height and break to pieces. Those fruits are the size of elephants, and the juice gliding from them becomes a river named Jambu Nadi. This river falls a distance of 10,000 yojanas from the summit of Meru Mandara to the southern side of Ilavrita and floods the entire land of Ilavrita with juice. The mud on both banks of the river Jambu Nadi, being moistened by the flowing juice and then dried by the air and the sunshine, produces huge quantities of gold called Jambunada. The denizens of heaven use this gold for various kinds of ornaments. Therefore, all the inhabitants of the heavenly planets and their youthful wives are fully decorated with golden helmets, bangles, and belts, and thus they enjoy life. So you don't have to go out and buy anything. You just go pick it up down at the river, right? So you can imagine, you know, you have these old grizzly guys sitting down there, you know, panning for gold, and they get a few grains. You know. So the concept is there, but they're just missing out on the volume. You know.
And they're probably not so fragrant in their bodies.
Well, they're probably fragrant, but by Krishna's grace, not 80 miles like that. Otherwise, no one would have entered California, right? They all would have just... Okay, 17 to 21. In his purport to verse 20 to 21, Srila Prabhupada comments, "In modern times, girls and ladies have ornaments made of plastic instead of gold, and plastic utensils are used instead of golden ones. Yet people are very proud of their material wealth." Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I was looking at it. Was this where we mentioned it the other day? It's one. It's quite a high end kind of it. It uses, makes designs like, you know, it's, they take very bright, full colors and do geometric designs. It's one painter does this, Monda or something. But whatever it is, they have these. So the bracelets are made of something that have a little something in it. But then everything on top's enamel, right? And enamel is just clay, basically, isn't it? It's just porcelain. Porcelain that has some colors in it. Yeah, it means you put some minerals, and then when you fire it, then it takes that on. And they're extremely expensive. And so people are very, very proud of these, but they're not actually worth anything, you know? In fact, well, here, the demigods and their wives, it's just gold, you know, so basically how much you can wear, you know, when you can't sit up, stand up, you know, then you got too much on.
A little help here.
Yeah, yeah, you know, so, yeah. Yeah. Therefore, the people of this age are described as Manda Sumanda Matayo Manda Bhagya Hupadruta. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.10. In other words, they are extremely bad and slow to understand the opulence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They have been described as Sumanda Mataya because their conceptions are so crippled that they accept a bluffer who produces a little gold to be God. Because they have no gold in their possession, they are actually poverty-stricken, and therefore they are considered unfortunate. Right? So previously, you know, everybody had some gold and stuff like that. If you didn't, you had tons of silver. Mm-hmm. Like I was mentioning, these gypsy girls that would, you know, they would, so I haven't seen for a long time, but used to go down to Sagar. When everyone go to Sagar, a lot of times people would just walk. Like they start anywhere along the Ganga, along, you know, in India, and walk down to Sagar.
So I guess it would be, you know, a pilgrimage. So it would take them, you know, I'm not sure how long, 3 to 6 weeks, depending on how long they want to do it. So I remember seeing this one gypsy girl in Calcutta, you know, from Rajasthan, wearing huge amounts of silver. You know, the stuff they wear is really big and heavy. Ankle bells and neck things, you know, bangles up their arms, like that. And she says it's a real trip to anywhere else in India, you beg, and it's fine. But in Calcutta, you know, Bengal, the thing is, you have so much silver, why are you begging? You know, their thing is when you have absolutely nothing, you're about to die, okay, then we'll give you 10 paisa, you know. Like that. Well, everybody else, it was just counted as, well, that's what you wear, and you have nothing to eat.
Yeah.
You know, so we can see is the standard is here. And then go back in time, probably is referring here, is that that would have been gold before. Yeah. People would have worn, you know, plenty of gold. It's just like, you know, it's just the standard. Gold utensils, gold, like it's considered you cook rice in a gold pot. It's very good. Like that. It's good for the system, or at least the silver. And Karais and that, they used to use silver. Like that. Nowadays, I don't think anybody does. But before, you know, it's now you have these special pots that conduct the heat, and they don't stick and all this, and but they're made out of all kinds of chemicals. Yeah. Yep. But before, they just used a solid silver pot. You know, the thing would wear who knows how many kilos. You know, 4 or 5 kilo karai, you know. And, you know, nothing sticks. It's very good. And, you know. That I know of. It's because it gets so fine. I mean, sorry, you probably have to be careful, but... You know, it's much finer than, you know, bell metal does quite well. But even that, people don't use bell metal anymore either. Yeah. Before, it's like, you know, the pot, okay, the rice pot was bell metal, or the karais were bell metal, but no one uses them.
It makes you wonder where all the silver and gold is.
It's been wasted on photography, I think.
Yeah.
At least the silver. Yeah, so they, I mean, now they go to digital, so there'll be something more. But I think that there's, that's the one thing. Gold mines, they find more and more. But silver mines, there's no more mines. Mm. So the silver is actually less. But since they've gone to the digital cameras, then, you know, it'll be there. But still people use film. Mm.
Okay, footnote 7. In his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 110.17, Srila Prabhupada reveals why gold is abundant in some areas and scarce in others. Gold, jewels, pearls, and valuable stones were used in the luxurious royal ceremonies. They are all nature's gifts and are produced by the hills, oceans, etc. By the order of the Lord, when man does not waste his valuable time in producing unwanted things in the name of necessities. By so-called development of industrial enterprises, they are now using pots of gutta percha instead of metals like gold, silver, brass, and copper. What is gutta percha? Anybody know?
It's a resin that can be set to different types. I think it is made from some form of tree sap.
And it resists heat?
Thick liquid and they can form in different shapes. I can't imagine them would be very good for cooking.
Yeah. Well, it's also, it's like you sometimes you see in kitchens they have these rubber bowls. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't have something in them, they just collapse. It's kind of weird.
Silicone.
Yes, yeah, silicone. It's kind of weird. You know, how do you work with that? And somehow people think that's nice. I remember seeing one chef goes into the kitchen, someone hands him that, he goes, "What's this? I want a bowl."
This gutta percha was popular about 100 years ago. They used to use it for casting different intricate things.
Oh, now they don't use it as much. Now they use plastic.
Plastic, yeah.
Okay, so that's the advancement.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There was Bakelite in between, I think. And
oh, yeah, I remember Bakelite. That was weird stuff.
They are using margarine instead of purified butter, and 1/4 of the city population has no shelter.
That's
the reality. Srila Sukadev Goswami continues. On the side of Suparsha Mountain stands a big tree called Maha Kadamba, which is very celebrated. From the hollows of this tree flow 5 rivers of honey, each about 5 yojana, 5 vyamas wide. The flowing honey falls incessantly from the top of Suparshva Mountain and flows all around Ilavritavarsh, beginning from the western side. Thus the whole land is saturated with the pleasing fragrance. The air carrying the scent from the mouths of those who drink that honey perfumes the land for 100 yojanas around. Similarly, on Kumuda Mountain, there's a great banyan tree, which is called Sutta Valsha, because it has 100 main branches. From those branches come many roots, from which many rivers are flowing. These rivers flow down from the top of the mountain to the northern side of Ilavritavarsh for the benefit of those who live there. Because of these flowing rivers, all the people have ample supplies of milk, yogurt, honey, clarified butter, ghee, molasses, food grains, clothes, bedding, sitting places, and ornaments. All the objects they desire are sufficiently supplied for their prosperity, and therefore they are very happy. Right? So therefore they have the piety left, so it's not so much that you have to work. They all have duties to perform, but it's not that you have to work, like here. Here's the place where if you don't work, then, you know, there's, you'll, you, yeah, problem. Sums it up. In his purport to verse 24, Srila Prabhupada comments, "The prosperity of humanity does not depend on a demoniac civilization that has no culture and no knowledge, but has only gigantic skyscrapers and huge automobiles always rushing down the highways." Wow.
So poetic.
Yes. Very funny. <Okay. laughs> "The products of nature are sufficient. When there is profuse supply of milk, yogurt, honey, food grains, ghee, molasses, dhoti, saris, bedding, sitting places, and ornaments, the residents are actually opulent. When a profuse supply of water from the river inundates the land, all these things can be produced." Right? When the land is fertile and there's plenty of water, then everything works.
Yes.
"And there will not be scarcity. This all depends, however, on the performance of sacrifice as described in the Vedic literature. Annad bhavanti bhutani parjanyad anna sambhava yagyad bhavati parjanyo yagya karma samudbhava. All living bodies subsist on food grains, which are produced from rains. Rains are produced by the performance of yagya, sacrifice, and yagya is born of prescribed duties." Right? So that's what Krishna is always talking about, prescribed duties. Because from prescribed duties, then there's going to be the yagya, and then from there everything else will happen. So that's the point, is everything comes because of sacrifice.
Yes.
Mm. Right? If there's sufficient and proper rain, everything is there.
Yes.
Mm. "If we follow these principles in full Krishna consciousness, human society will be prosperous, and they will be happy both in this life and in the next." Srila Sukadeva Goswami continues, "The residents of the material world who enjoy the products of these flowing rivers have no wrinkles on their bodies and no gray hair. They never feel fatigue, and perspiration does not give their bodies a bad odor." Right? Because they've been, if this is all you eat all day, then you'll be doing okay. Right? "They are not afflicted by old age, disease, or untimely death." Doesn't mean they don't die, it's just not untimely. They don't, in other words, they don't get hit by one of those falling mangoes.
Yeah.
Right? "They do not suffer from chilly cold or scorching heat." Right? So in other words, there'll be the flavor of heat summer and cool in the winter, because otherwise then how do you get out your light clothes or your heavy clothes, right? So the variety, and also then your diets and all those. But it's for the flavor, not because it's too cold.
Do they die on those
planets? I hear they would die. It's the heavenly planets you don't die. You fall out of there and
then die.
Yeah, then die. It's like they toss you out of the building and you die in the back alley. Right? You know, like that. No one dies in this building. Right? They all die in the alley. Right? Like that. Yeah. "Nor do their bodies lose their luster." Right? 'Cause so that means that they're always happy. And they don't have a time when they're feeling weak or unhappy or stuff, so that the body loses its luster. "They all live very happily without anxieties until death." Right?
and then there's death.
Right, you know, so then that
kind of put
they're working on it. They're working on it, right? Srila Prabhupada comments, this verse hints at the perfection of human society even within this material world. The miserable conditions of this mature world can be corrected by a sufficient supply of milk, yogurt, honey, ghee, molasses, food grains, ornaments, bedding, sitting places, and so on. Mm-hmm. Like that. Strange, it doesn't mention olive oil and soya. It mentions milk, yogurt, ghee. Okay. This is human civilization. Ample food grains can be produced through agricultural enterprises, and profuse supplies of milk, yogurt and ghee can be arranged through cow protection. Abundant honey can be obtained if the forests are protected. Unfortunately, in modern civilization, men are busy killing the cows that are the source of yogurt, milk, and ghee. They are cutting down all the trees that supply honey. They are opening factories to manufacture nuts, bolts, automobiles, and wine instead of engaging in agriculture. How can the people be happy? They must suffer from all the misery of materialism. The bodies become wrinkled and gradually deteriorate until they become almost like dwarves. And a bad odor emanates from the bodies because of unclean perspiration resulting from eating all kinds of nasty things. This is not human civilization. If people actually want happiness in this life and want to prepare for the best in the next life, they must adopt a Vedic civilization. In a Vedic civilization, there's full supply of all the necessities mentioned above, because it starts from prescribed duties. That's the Vedic civilization. Then that means there'll be yajna, and then from there, then it all happens. Almost like dwarves, I guess you mean at the end of the Kali Yuga. Or also just people are so hunchbacked. And stuff. In any case. So that gives an idea that Kalki actually has to wear a cloth around his nose when he comes.
Yeah. He's like one of those mounds.
Srila Sukadeva Goswami continues, there are other mountains beautifully arranged around the foot of Mount Meru, like the filaments around the whorl of a lotus flower. Their names are Kuranga, Kurara, Kushumba, Vaikanka, Trikuta, Shishira, Patanga, Ruchaka, Nishada, Sinivasa, Kapila, Shanka, Vaidurya, Jaruti, Hamsa, Rishaba, Naga, Kalanjara, and Narada. There are other mountains beautifully arranged around the foot of Mount Meru, like the filaments around the whorl of a lotus. Their names, didn't we just read that? Okay. In the middle of the summit of Meru, I was thinking, okay, more filaments. Right, okay. In the middle of the summit of Meru is the township of Lord Brahma. Each of its four sides is calculated to extend for 10 million yojanas, 80 million miles.
Okay. Big city. You know, we're thinking we're doing pretty good. Yeah.
The figure 10 million yojanas comes from the Sanskrit ayuta yojana sahasrim, which breaks down to ayuta 10,000, yojana yojanas, sahasrim 1,000. Multiplying 1,000 times 10,000 gives us 10 million. This is how the verse was translated by both Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and our Srila Prabhupada based on commentaries of some of the previous acharyas. In many of the acharyas' commentaries to this verse, however, Brahmapuri is described as having a measurement of 10,000 yojanas, and the surrounding cities having a measurement of 2,500 yojanas each, one-fourth the size of Brahmapuri. In this regard, Srila Jiva Goswami comments, different viewpoints described in the commentaries are to be taken as in different creations.
Right, so that's the whole point. Because generally, if there's any difference in kind of some arrangement, they're just talking about different days of Brahma, different aspects of the creation. Because there'll be variety. Otherwise, why have a new day? Right? That's the whole.
This is like the universal form.
It's
not created by
Brahma. Brahma creates every day, but then it appears that there'll always be variety. Because the from what I understand, the lotus stem takes on a slightly different color, a slightly different mood. So therefore, the particular day has a particular flavor. So the basic principles are all the same. It's just there's a slightly different flavor in that day. So therefore, the living entities during that day, then there's a slightly different experience than it was on a different day. So that's what's called kalpa beta. It means a difference in creation. So it can either mean different creation, meaning, you know, a different lifetime of Brahma or a different universe, but it also can just mean a different day of Brahma. Like that. A, you know, like Nrisimhadeva is white, he's red, you know, depending upon what's happening. Varaha also is white and red. You know, so you get all these different. So this is the kalpa beta. So that's why it depends upon which one's done. So it's used here. It's translated that way. They're translating it different. They're talking about a different day. Like that.
This makes perfect sense because we know from the purports of Brahma Bimohana Lila that there were many universes and some of the Brahmas within those universes have 10 heads, 100 heads, 1,000,000 heads, etc., depending on the size of their universe. For our universe, the measurements we use for Brahmapuri is 10,000 yojanas and the surrounding cities 2,500 each, making them fit nicely atop Meru Mountain, which has a diameter of 33,000 yojanas. Okay, so that would be, you know, this particular manifestation. But how it manifests in other universes definitely is going to be bigger because the universe is bigger. So the point is, the bigger the universe, the bigger all these things are. Yeah. Okay, important verse.
Oh,
we didn't finish? Or didn't we finish? Oh, okay. Okay. It is made entirely of gold, and therefore learned sage scholars and sages call it Shata Kaumbhi. Surrounding Brahmapuri in all directions are the residences of the eight principal governors of the planetary systems, beginning with King Indra. These bodies are similar to Brahmapuri, but are one-fourth its size. These abodes are similar to Brahmapuri, but are one-fourth the size, 26 to 29. So it's just like in the mandala. So you have Indra in the east, then there'll be Agni next to that, then Yamaraj in the south, then, what's his name, Stanu will be next to that, then Varuna in the west, then Vayu will be next to that, Kuvera in the north, and then, I forget who's there, Shiva I think is next to that.
Isha.
Like that. So this is how it's arranged. So you also get, when you come down in Loka Loka, then you get the four main demigods in the four directions. So it's standard setup. Okay, important verse. Bhagavato gunamayi stula rupa aveshitam mano hyagune pi sukshmatatma atma jyotishi pare brahmani bhagavati vasude vakye kshamam aveshitum tad hu haitad guru guror hasya anu var nayitum iti. When the mind is fixed upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his external feature made of the material modes of nature, the gross universal form, it is brought to the platform of pure goodness. In that transcendental position, one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, who in his subtler form is self-effulgent and beyond the modes of nature. My Lord, please describe vividly how that form which covers the entire universe is perceived. Right? So that's what we're trying to. Means you're thinking of the Lord by meditating on the universal form, therefore you situate in pure goodness, therefore you can understand the original form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the whole point of the universal form. So for those who don't know the personality, then for yogis, and this is a very good method because they are into these kind of metaphysical breakdowns, right? And for others, then if it's useful, they use it. But if not, the discussion is about the Lord anyway. Yes.
So this universal form, is it a part of the Brahman feature of the Lord?
Both the Brahman and Paramatma.
So both.
Yes, so you could say as the Brahman aspect of his Garbhodakshay Vishnu, or the attractiveness in those things and how the things work. And then the
the Paramatma aspect will be Kirudakshana Krishna, because they're both known as Hiranyagarbha, like that. But it will be how he pervades everything and this and that, because he pervades as both as Brahman and as Paramatma. But the point is, Paramatma is the duties and therefore what you're supposed to be doing. So what's the goal? What's the results? Like this. Well, the mechanics of it, that will be Garbhodaksha. Like that. You know, the energy is how they interact.
The mechanics of it would be Garbhodaksha?
Yeah.
Not Shura
Daksha? No, Shura Daksha would be... I mean, it depends on how you're looking at it. We're looking at here's duties and then the mechanics of means just the...
Okay,
not the mechanics of operating, the mechanics of how the masculine and feminine and, you know, interacts, like on this column. The mechanics of that, that would be, okay, this is how you do it, so therefore that's... But the point is that based on how the masculine and feminine principle works. Because each position you can move around. But it's just a matter of one situation, then you're defining it in a particular way. Chintamani.
You should have picked her up. Hello.
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 Yeah, no, it's really funny. You get somebody call you don't know, you talk in an Indian accent. And,
hello.
What is that? I'm looking for... Sorry.
In this chapter, description has been given of link, thread, eye, and different directions within there. And there's no mention of any other sort of dimension. But sometimes devotees like to explain all these things as being in some higher dimension, but it doesn't seem to be supported.
No. Personally, I would say is that this concept of these different dimensions comes in from the fragrances left over from working with quantum. Because they're into the thing, you know, it's like how many pots are here? There's millions of pots, depending on your perception. Which we'll also agree, but there's one pot. This pot is there, that's what it is. But everybody will see it differently. So that's the millions of perceptions. But the dimension is one. There's only 10 directions. You know, they're trying to, there's all these parallel universes and all this, that. In another universe, you actually can, you know, do something properly and run a family. But in this universe, you're a quantumist and you can't. Sorry. So that's the thing. It just makes it work for their brain.
It makes it unreal, doesn't it?
Yeah. But at the same time, these are the realists. So that's the thing is, they also have to make things work for them. But what they come up with is it's just like you have parallel all these existences. Why is that any more strange than having a mountain with a monster mango tree on it?
It makes less sense.
You know, like that. And then there's always the portals or something where somebody breaks through and then the next universe and like, what happened here?
To meet yourself.
I was reading recently from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati some of his English essays on the harmonist, and he was talking about Krishna appearing in this world, and he said that when he does so, he reveals the fourth to unlimited dimensions. So he was referring to the fourth dimension in the sense of the spiritual world.
Yes.
Surya,
yeah, that's the fourth dimension.
And Prabhupada also uses the same in the CCs.
Yeah, and also has the antimatter, which means the spiritual, the soul, and the Lord. You know, it's not the antimatter, it's just some particle within.
Within matter itself.
Yeah. You know, they find that, and then after some time, then they'll find something else. Then, if this is the God particle, what are they going to call the next one?
You know. Satan particle.
And then after that...
Jesus particle. Maybe Moses first.
Moses, a Holy Ghost particle.
So it's a flavor that's coming from modern science.
It's coming from modern science. There's no such thing as other. There's only 10 dimensions, 10 directions and all that. There may be perception that you can be seen or not, but that's according to piety in that.
That's limitations of senses.
Yeah, it's just like we see, it's just limitation of senses, limitation of mind. You take a bunch of, you know, wild street kids you know, and they're playing ball and take him inside the Louvre, do they see anything nice? They just see open spaces to kick a ball, you know, and they kick something, some falls off the wall or some statue falls over, more fun, you know. To them, it doesn't. So, like that, it's perceptions, but the point is the what is there is this one thing. Like that. They like to make it into these, but, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Comrades, the Acharya, Krishna and the Acharya are revealing how we can perceive.
Yes. Because the point is if you can accommodate a chinta, beta, beta, tattva, this stuff's not hard.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because it's all these things, it can be all these things at once. So it doesn't matter, you know, like how big is a watermelon, right? You know, around here, then there are these little dinky things like this, you know, but in Alabama, you know, they're monster things. I mean, you can't even pick them up. Yeah, so. They're huge, big monster things. You know, they win prizes.
The reason you got a yellow watermelon.
I don't know. That's Bangladesh. The Japanese, they have black and yellow.
Okay. Yeah, so the other ones are all the green, regular, dark green, light green stripes.
You know, but the inside, instead of red. Thing.
Oh, it's yellow.
Oh, yeah.
Who knows? Why not?
Hey, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
I've seen cubic watermelons.
Oh, yeah. I heard about those. Yeah. They were working on them.
But they're no good for eating.
No?
But good for transportation.
Great for transportation, packing. Now they ought to just figure out how they can build houses out of them.
Summer house.
Summer house, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, yeah.
They stayed moist on the inside, they'd be fire retardant.
Yes, yes. Okay.
Starting down the notes now.
Yes,
note to self.
Make sure you get ones that are still moist inside.
Moist is absolute paramount.
Yes, okay. Okay. Chapter 17, The Descent of the River Ganges. Pratigya, the water of the Ganges purifies the entire land. The pratigya of this chapter is taken from Srila Prabhupada's purport to text 4. After the water of the causal ocean leaks through the hole created by Lord Vamanadeva, it flows down to Dhruvaloka, the pole star, and then to the seven planets beneath Dhruvaloka. Then it is carried to the moon by innumerable celestial airplanes. And then it falls to the top of Mount Meru, which is known as Sumeru Parvata. In this way, the water of the Ganges finally reaches the lower planets and the peaks of the Himalayas. From there it flows to Haridwar and through the plains of India, purifying the entire land.
Quite a journey.
Yeah, yeah. It gets carried in airplanes.
Yes.
I guess it must be, yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Water.
Yeah. It's pretty far. Yeah, yeah, a lot of water. Chapter 17 summarizes question and answers. In this chapter, a couple of rhetorical questions are asked in verses 20 and 21 by Lord Shiva in his prayers to Lord Shankarsana. They do not come under this study. Adhyaya Prakashika. The 17th chapter describes the descent of Ganges to earth, the happiness of Bauma Swarga, and the service of Shankarsana and Rudra.
When it says they do not come under this study, does that mean the Bhagavatam or this is just...
No, it just means we don't categorize it as a verse that's being studied like that, because they're rhetorical like that. You know, who would not surrender to such a Lord? You know, like that.
Okay.
That's what it means.
Of course. Yeah.
Another question that we can
answer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Lord Vishnu once approached Adhyaya Prakashika. Okay. Lord Vishnu once approached Bali Maharaj while the king was performing a sacrifice. The Lord appeared before him as Trivikram or Vamana, and begged alms from the king in the form of three steps of land. With two steps, Lord Vamana covered all three planetary systems and pierced the covering of the universe with the toes of his left foot. Like, not even right foot, just left foot, like, just to show it's not a big deal, right?
A few drops of water from the causal ocean leaked through this hole and fell on the head of Lord Shiva. Right? Because we're thinking it's a big thing that extends to the universe. But the point is his toe pokes through the universe. And the universe is hugely bigger than what's inside.
Yeah. It goes through all the covering?
It goes through all the covering. Otherwise, how does the water from the causal ocean come?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's...
10 million times bigger.
Yes.
His left became lower, like the hand of the...
I'm not sure how he did it, or if he just became totally just bigger.
Then he would have pierced the coverings himself.
No, but then he sticks his leg out, so... Point is it's him, so he can do it however he wants, right?
That's the benefit of being God.
Huh?
That's the benefit of being God.
God, yeah.
It helps.
Yeah, that's okay. A few drops of the water from the causal ocean leaked through this hole and fell on the head of Lord Shiva, where they remain for 1,000 millenniums. These drops of water are the sacred Ganges River. It first flows into the heavenly planets, which are located on the soles of Lord Vishnu's feet. The Ganges River is known by many names, such as the Bhagirathi and the Janavi. It purifies Dhruva Loka and the planets of the seven sages, because both Dhruva and the sages have no other desire than to serve the Lord's lotus feet. The Ganges River, emanated from the lotus feet of the Lord, inundates the heavenly planets, especially the moon, and then flows through Brahmapuri atop Mount Meru. Especially the moon, right? And we're saying it's just dust.
It's only a few drops then, because it was few drops on the Lord Shiva's head. So it's only a few drops.
But it's enough. I mean, would you say how big was the universe covering?
10 million times the size of the inner part.
10 million times. So then the universe inside is 4 billion miles across. So 10 million times that. So.
And that's just a mustard seed.
Yeah.
And then there's a drop. It's bigger than a mustard seed.
Yeah. You know, so it's... It'll last a while. It's a big drop. Don't worry, we're not going to run out. Right? Okay, and then flows through Brahmapuri atop Mount Meru. Here the river divides into four branches, known as Sita, Alakananda, Chakshu, and Bhadra, which then flow down to the ocean of salt water. The branch known as Sita flows through Shekhara Parvata and Gandamandana Parvata, and then flows down to Bhadrashva Parva, where it mixes with the ocean of salt water in the west. Bhadrashva is the one... Where... Oh, here we go. Oh, okay, okay. Oh, so it just goes off of each side like that. The Alka... The Chakshu branch flows through the Malayavangiri and after reaching Ketumala, Varsha, mixes with the ocean of salt water in the west. The branch known as Bhadra flows onto Mount Meru, Mount Kamunda and the Nila Sweta and Shringavan mountains before it reaches Kuru Desha, where it flows into the ocean of salt water in the north. The Alakananda branch flows through Brahmalaya, crosses over many mountains, including Hemakuta and Himakuta, then reaches Bharatvarsha, where it flows into the southern side of the ocean of salt water. Many other rivers and their branches flow through the nine Varshas. The tract of land known as Bharatvarsha is the field of activities, and the other eight Varshas are for persons who are meant to enjoy heavenly comfort. In each of these eight beautiful provinces, the celestial denizens enjoy various standards of material comfort and pleasure. A different incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead distributes His mercy in each of the nine Varshas of Jambudvip. In the Ila Vritta Varsh, Lord Shiva is the only male. There he lives with his wife, Bhavani, who is attended by many maidservants. If any other male enters that province, Bhavani curses him to become a woman. Lord Shiva worships Lord Sankarsana by offering various prayers, one of which is as follows. My dear Lord, please liberate all your devotees from material life and bind all the non-devotees to the material world. Without your mercy, no one can be released from the bondage of material existence. Shloka Anusharanam, summary of the verses. Verses 1 to 10, the Ganges descent. Verses 11 to 14, the activities of the residents of Jambudweep. Verses 15 to 24, Lord Shiva prays to Lord Sankarsana and Ila Vritta Varsh. Verses 1 to 10, the Ganges descent. In verses 1 to 10, Sukadeva Goswami explains that the Ganges River is the water from the Karana ocean that seeped in through the crack in the universal shell created by the toe of Lord Vamana. As these sanctified waters make their way through the different planets and are finally distributed to the various varshas of Jambudweep, many intelligent persons take advantage of the sacred river to purify their minds of sinful activities by placing that Charinamrita of the Supreme Lord on their heads. Sukadeva Goswami said, My dear King, Lord Vishnu, the enjoyer of all sacrifices, appeared as Vamanadeva in the sacrificial arena of Lord Abali Maharaj. Then he extended his left foot to the end of the universe and pierced a hole in its covering with the nail of his big toe. Through the hole, the pure water of the causal ocean entered this universe as the Ganges River. Having washed the lotus feet of the Lord, which are covered with reddish powder, the water of the Ganges acquired a very beautiful pink color. Every living being can immediately purify his mind of material contamination by touching the transcendental water of the Ganges, yet its waters remain ever pure. Because the Ganges directly touches the lotus feet of the Lord before descending within this universe, she is known as Vishnupadi. Later she received other names like Janavi and Bhagirati. After 1,000 millenniums, the water of the Ganges descended on Dhruvaloka, the topmost planet in this universe. Therefore, all learned sages and scholars proclaim Dhruvaloka to be Vishnupada, situated on the Lord Vishnu's lotus feet. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments. At the time of Vamana avatar, Tatra, by stepping over the earth with his right foot, Vikramata, and from throwing his left foot into the air, he caused all places up to the top of the universe to tremble, up to the layer of Prakriti, where the gunas are pacified. As related by Brahma, Trisham Yasad Danad Urukrama Payanam, Srimad Bhagavatam 274. Thus, the spiritual stream of water of the Karana ocean, outside of the eight layers of the universe, descended to Dhruvaloka, Diva Murdani. Srila Prabhupada adds, It is a proven fact that a person who regularly bathes in the Ganges is purified both externally and internally. Externally, his body becomes immune to all kinds of diseases, and internally, he gradually develops a devotional attitude towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continues, Dhruva Maharaj, the famous son of Maharaj Uttanapada, is known as the most exalted devotee of the Supreme Lord because of his firm determination in executing devotional service. Knowing that the sacred Ganges water washes the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu, Dhruva Maharaj, situated on his own planet, to this very day accepts that water on his head with great devotion. Because he constantly thinks of Krishna very devoutly within the core of his heart, he is overcome with ecstatic anxiety. Tears flow from his half-open eyes, and eruptions appear on his entire body. The seven great sages, Marichi, Vashishta, Atri, and so on, reside on planets beneath Dhruvaloka. Well aware of the influence of the water of the Ganges, to this day they keep Ganges water on the tufts of hair on their heads. They have concluded, right, you know, so they always put on their sikha. Always, you know, that, you know, do achman, always, you know, sprinkling, you're always, you know, just... They have concluded that this is the ultimate wealth, the perfection of all austerities, and the best means of prosecuting transcendental life. Right? So So they've taken this as the ultimate wealth, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a Bengali saying, those who live next to the Ganges bathe in a tube well. So somehow or another you get the idea, they don't. Having obtained uninterrupted devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they neglect all other beneficial processes like religion, economic development, sense gratification, even merging into the Supreme. Just as jnanis think that merging into the existence of the Lord is the highest truth, these seven exalted personalities accept devotional service as the perfection of life. 2-3. According to Srila Sridhar Swami's explanation of Upek Shitan Yartatma Gataya, they think, there is no greater perfection than this, Eta Vati. By having attained Bhakti Yoga, they reject Atma Gyan and other goals of human endeavor. Because Bhakti already includes them, yes. Yes, no, that's there. That's there. But that's when you're too far away. But when you live right next to the Ganges, you see people actually have tube wells. Because it's easier than walking down to the Ganga. So your point is to go to the Ganga, then you have the whole... If you bathe in the tube well, you get the benefit of you bathing in Ganga water. But basically you just deal with it as if it's water. If it's Ganges, you'll go offer your obeisances and offer prayers and do tarpanas and all these different kinds of things, no? Yes, that's the whole point. So they're just meaning that they don't take it as seriously. That's what the aphorism is about, that they have the opportunity but they don't take it so seriously. You know, so it's kind of, you know, tongue in cheek that. But the point is what's being made here is Dhruva Maharaj and the seven great sages, they take it very seriously. So they're always relating to the Ganga and consider this to be special, because that surrender to the lotus feet of the Lord, that's what you want to do, and the Ganga is coming from the lotus feet of the Lord. So then they always have the association of Ganga. So,
that's interesting too, that it mentions these other processes. And then even merging into the Supreme, indicating that that's the most useless one of all.
Yeah, yeah. But also that they're great sages, so you might think that they might be inclined towards that, but it's just no.
No. So you could see that we're dealing with the universal form here, so the others, they kind of fit in. Can you say like that? You can see Krishna in these.
Yeah, because in the Brahman aspect, then you have to get back to the personal. So the liberation is not going to get you anything.
No.
Yeah, because you can see the masculine feminine interaction in the other three.
Yeah.
This you can also see. It means it's his Brahman and Saguna Brahman. So Nirguna is basically useless. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it
means when we say the devotee becomes Nirguna, means no material qualities. Yeah. But that doesn't mean that he isn't with qualities.
Yeah. Right. That's actually with qualities.
Yes.
Material is not. Right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. If you say nirguna, that's a quality.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Then it's a, Srila Prabhupada adds, transcendentalists are divided into two primary groups: the nirvisheshavadis or impersonalists, and the bhaktas or devotees. The impersonalists do not accept spiritual varieties of life. They want to merge into the existence of the Supreme Lord in his Brahman feature, the Brahma Jyoti. The devotees, however, desire to take part in the transcendental activities of the Supreme Lord. In the upper planetary system, the topmost planet is Dhruvaloka, and beneath Dhruvaloka are the seven planets occupied by the great sages, beginning with Marichi, Vashishta, and Atri. All these sages regard devotional service as the highest perfection of life. Therefore, they all carry the holy water of the Ganges on their heads. This verse proves that for one who has achieved the platform of pure devotional service, nothing else is important, even so-called liberation, kaivalya. So that's the whole point. The Ganges and worship of the Supreme Lord are taken as the same thing. Right? Because it's connected to the lotus feet of the Lord. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continues, After purifying the seven planets near Dhruvaloka, the pole star, the Ganges waters carry through the spaceways of the demigods and billions of celestial airplanes. Okay, so that answers that one. Right? So how many airplanes are there? Do they have to sit there and wait, you know? I mean, it's already full, though. Billions, right? Okay. Then it inundates the moon, Chandraloka, and finally reaches Lord Brahma's abode atop Mount Meru, Srila Prabhupada comments. We should always remember that the Ganges River comes from the causal ocean beyond the covering of the universe. Mm-hmm. Srila Sukadeva goes, yes.
It means that the demigods they can visit Brahmapur? Not the main ones, but those on the airplanes.
That appears, at least, whether they can visit, but at least they can fly by.
This is Brahmapuri on top of Mount Meru, not Brahmaloka at the top of the universe.
Okay, that's different.
Yeah. Yeah, like we say, they all have different places. So like Brahma, that seems to be the lowest.
He also has on the outermost island, considered to be his 10 million petal sitting lotus.
Oh, 10 million petal sitting lotus.
Mm-hmm. Golden petals.
Mm-hmm. That could work.
Oh, that's on the top of the lot.
Step. I think that one that's on
Pushkar Dweep.
Pushkar Dweep? That lotus, that means, but the lotus that has a universal form in it, that he's sitting on top of, and that's the Satya Loka, right?
I can't think
of
the
point is, they're all the same thing, just differently situated.
Yes.
So.
Oh.
Like that. Yeah. Yes.
The Milky Way
is
the Ganga that comes before it comes to the
Milky Way.
Yes.
Yes. This is the Milky Way.
So all those billions of things, that's the Milky Way that she's coming down. And where's, but that's also known as Shishumara.
The Milky Way is part of Shishumara.
Oh, part of Shishumara. Okay.
I think the underside of it.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Nice. You don't see Milky Way hardly these days. There's so much light in Mayapur and around that you can't see it anymore.
The dust in the air.
Yeah. Before you used to be able to see quite clearly. Hmm. Okay. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continues. On top of Mount Meru, the Ganges divides into four branches, each of which gushes in a different direction, east, west, north, and south. These branches, known by the names of Sita, Alakananda, Chakshu, and Bhadra, flow down to the ocean. The branch of the Ganges, known as Sita, flows through Brahmapuri atop Mount Meru, and from there it runs down to the nearby peaks of the Kesarachala Mountains, which stand almost as high as Mount Meru itself. These mountains are like a bunch of filaments around Mount Meru. From the Kesarachala Mountains, the Ganges falls to the peak of Gandamandana Mountain and then flows into the land of Bhadrashva Varsha. Footnote 9. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says in his commentary that because the mountains similar to filaments are the same height as Meru, the water first, after leaving Meru, falls on the main peaks of this range. Then, from those mountains, Sita flows down, slipping over Ilavrita and falls into Bhadrashva. So it doesn't. So she doesn't go into Ilavrita. Mm-hmm. I guess there's too much, you know, flowing milk and honey. So that's what. Did somebody get cheated here? Supposed to be the land of milk and honey, and that's Ilavrita Varsha, and they ended up with some sand and rocks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because, like Brahmapuri, they have different.
Okay, very clever. Right?
Looks a little different.
Slightly different, yeah.
Also, where's the gold?
Yes. Well, that's the problem. We know where the gold is, and it's the ones that don't have it have the problem.
Maybe,
Finally, it reaches the ocean of salt in the east. The branch of the Ganges known as Chakshu falls into the summit of Malayavan Mountain. And from there cascades onto the land of Malavarsha. The Ganges flows incessantly through Ketumalavarsha and in this way also reaches the ocean of salt water in the west. It means it doesn't actually fall on top of Meru, this one. Only the first one seems to.
No, the Ganga flows onto Meru and then splits there to fall.
Oh, okay, but one of them then flows around and then goes off. That says that Sita, she flows through there. Flows through Brahmapuri atop, because the other one just says it goes right down onto the other.
They split up in Brahmapuri, that's where Ganga lands, okay. And it's in water,
okay.
Inside
Brahmapuri. In Brahmapuri, okay. The branch of the Ganges known as Bhadra flows from the northern side of Mount Meru, and its waters fall into the peaks of Kumunda Mountain, Mount Nila, Sweta Mountain, and Shringavan Mountain in succession. Footnote 10. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura comments, from Meru, Bhadra flows to the Keshachara range, and then to Nila, then to Sweta, and then to Shringavan. From Shringavan it flows down to Kuru. It slips over Ilavritta and the other two Varshas, Ramika and Hiranyamaya. So it seems that they don't always touch down, they're always touching at the very outer edge. Mm. Means that to the east and west, then they're going down and then going, it, all of them are missing Ilavritta Varsha. I mean, they go across the tops of the mountains.
Yeah.
But so that means if the residents there want to take a bath in the Ganges, they actually have to go up to the top of the mountain. Because otherwise, they're just there for enjoyment.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why she probably just stays on the top of the mountain. Mm-hmm. Then it runs down into the province of Kuru and after crossing through that land flows into the saltwater ocean in the north. Similarly, the branch of the Ganges known as Alakananda flows from the southern side of Brahmapuri, Brahmasadana. Passing over the tops of mountains in various lands, it falls down with fierce force upon the peaks of the mountains Hemakuta and Himakuta. After inundating the tops of those mountains, the Ganges falls down under the tract of land known as Bharatavarsha, which she also inundates. Then the Ganges flows into the ocean of salt water in the south. Persons who come to bathe in this river are fortunate. It is not very difficult for them to achieve with every step the results of performing great sacrifices, like the Rajasuya and Ashwamedha Yajnas. 5-9, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura elaborates. Skipping over the three Varshas, Ilavritta, Hari, and Kimpurusha, the Alakananda falls from peak to peak. This sentence should be understood. Bharatam abhi varsham should mean falling in the Bharatavarsha. The four rivers, Sita, Alakananda, Chakshu, and Bhadra, skipping over many varshas, flow down from the mountain range bordering the varsha nearest the ocean onto the earth, and then with bowed head, so to speak, enter the ocean, their husband giving up pride. Yeah, so she's just coming from the top of Brahmapuri, it seems they're flowing there, but then after that just goes down the tops of the mountains. And then whichever is the outer edge, so in the north and south, then that will be your, Kuru and Bharatavarsha. It'll skip all the ones in between. And then those other ones, it'll go down the mountains and then it'll touch the ground and then go out there. So it appears that most of it also gets skipped, but it does touch in that. So then we're quite fortunate. Srila Sugadev Goswami continues, right, because before this, as she's skipping over these things, she's quite powerful and everything, but then she, is very humble in that when she goes into the ocean, right, because of that relationship. Srila Sugadev Goswami continues, many other rivers, both big and small, flow from the top of Mount Meru. These rivers are like daughters of the mountain, and they flow to the various tracts of land in hundreds of branches. Verse 10. Verses 11 to 14. The activities of the residents of Jambudvipa. although Bharatvarsha is the field of activities for fruitive workers. Life on the other eight varshas is much like that on the heavenly planets, where the pious residents are able to enjoy their previous karma without performing current work. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continues, among the nine varshas, the tract of land known as Bharatvarsha is understood to be the field of fruitive activities. Learned scholars and saintly persons declare the other eight varshas to be meant for very highly elevated pious persons. After returning from the heavenly planets, they enjoy the remaining results of their pious activities in those eight earthly varshas. Verse 11, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. There are three types of swarga, heavenly, earthly, and subterranean, Divya Swarga, Bhauma Swarga, and Bila Swarga, respectively. These eight varshas, the other eight varshas of Jambudvipa, except Bharata, are the places of earthly heaven. So these are Bhauma Swarga. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada emphasizes the importance of not becoming distracted by the heavenly situations and focus on the goal of returning back to Godhead with the help of a bona fide spiritual master. Thus he reveals the qualifications of a guru. Even the most qualified brahmanas cannot become a guru if he is not a representative of Krishna. Right, so that's the main thing. Then it's going to be, you know, other the brahminical qualification. Right? Brahmanas are supposed to acquire six kinds of auspicious qualifications. They become very learned scholars, patana, and qualified teachers, patana. They become expert in worshipping the Lord or the demigods, yajana, and they teach others how to execute this worship, yajana. They qualify themselves as bona fide persons to receive alms from others, pratigraha, and they distribute the wealth and charity, dana. Yet even a Brahman possessing these qualifications cannot become a guru unless he is the representative of Krishna. Guru na sasyat, right? So that's the main thing. So we see is even though devotees may not know all these others so well and be expert in them, still if they know Krishna, then they can function as guru. Does that make sense? So that's the main thing.
Yeah. Yeah. When we say the six qualification, you can say the learned scholar means student and qualified teacher.
Patana, yes, patana. Means patana, he studies the scripture, patana, he teaches it. Yeah. Yajana, he does, you know, worship the Lord through deity worship, yajnas, whatever is the system. And yajana, then he teaches others how to do so. So that means he'll do for them, he'll do like this, right? Pratigraha, he'll accept charity, and dana, he'll give in charity. So that means studying the scriptures, performing, you know, sacrifice for yourself and giving in charity, this is common amongst all the dvijas. But teaching others, performing ceremonies for others and receiving charity, that's only for the Brahmins. Okay. So of all of these, then generally we take the dana part very seriously. The other five, that, you know, you wouldn't want to be fanatic. No, excuse me, dana means receiving, so pratigraha.
Yeah.
Others should dana, and we pratigraha.
Yes, yes. In a matter of perspective.
Yes.
Which one is most important?
Srila Sukadeva Goswami continues, in these eight varshas, or tracts of land, human beings live 10,000 years according to earthly calculations. All because there, the days and nights are going to be the same, no?
Yes.
Yeah, so they live 10,000 of our years. Mm-hmm. Right? That's why you see is these Manus, because they live in the same tract of land, that they might rule for millions of years. Because the way the sun works is the same. Mm-hmm. But like when you go up to the top of Meru, up there, then 6 months is a day, 6 months is a night. So 1 year is 1 day. Mm-hmm. Right? So, but in the same time, someone else, that would have been a year. Mm-hmm. Of experience, understand? Mm-hmm. So, though they live a longer life, their experience is only 100 years.
Yeah.
Right. Sentences. Yeah. So here, so this is this. It'll be something less. It's not the same facilities as on the those
heavenly places on top of Meru. But, as we hear, they're quite good. You know, it's just like, you know, then here, even here in this earth, you have different places that are considered more luxurious and less luxurious. Like that. So that's you always have this depending upon the piety. But as Prabhupada mentions, we can't get distracted. They may be nicer, so then, you know, then you engage that in Krishna service. It's nice, so then you talk to the people there about Krishna. It's not so nice, you talk to the people about Krishna. So the service remains the same. Right? Nothing actually changes. All the inhabitants are almost like demigods. They have the bodily strength of 10,000 elephants. Indeed, their bodies are as sturdy as thunderbolts. Right? So they probably don't get flu every season. Like no asthma. They're good. The youthful duration of their lives is very pleasing, and both men and women enjoy sexual union with great pleasure for a long time. After years of sensual pleasure, when a balance of 1 year of life remains, the wife conceives a child. Thus, the standard of pleasure for the residents of these heavenly regions is exactly like that of the human beings who lived during Treta Yuga. Right, so that's just the standard. Right? So then here again, it's like that, you know, it's going along very nicely. And that, so the last year, you'll live 10,000 years, so the last year, then the wife gets pregnant. Right?
Then you know.
Yeah, basically, you know, that's it.
It's similar.
Because also there's probably the kids, when they're born, just immediately grow up. There's only just a short time of them being small.
It's like here, your life is over.
Yeah.
It's more liberal there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mark, I have a question. This is maybe technical and useless.
Why not? Having said that.
If you have two people there, and they have one child in the last year of their life, it would seem the population would always be dwindling.
So you're thinking that they pay people to have kids. So it means this is where the concept has come from, Sweden.
Is there another way people appear there?
They come down in their airplanes and hang out in Nandankana, I guess. I don't know. It doesn't seem to be a problem.
It was a useless question.
Yeah, but it doesn't say that they specifically necessarily have one kid.
No.
But
a child.
Well, generally you would, because consciousness would be higher, so there's one child. Lower consciousness, you get more.
You don't get a litter of children.
No. Yes. No.
Where would Manu live? Would he live on that planet?
I'm not sure, because Manu, it's all the whole Bhumandala is actually what he's in charge of. Does it mention which specific place he lives?
Not that I'm aware of. They must maybe mention somewhere. I think he has access to Mahaloka or so on.
He's on the top of Meru.
No, Mahaloka being above Swarga. Where all the progenitors and so on.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure. Like that. But, you know, this is their area. Because before it was just one tract of land, and then Priyavrata then divided into seven.
And another question. If this is similar to Treta Yuga here, so at that time people come here and they have to mingle, like Pandavas and...
It would appear that if you're pious enough, you can go there. Because it said that different kings, they would go into that, the next Kimpurusha Varsha, and that to, you know, different things like that. Somebody was doing some yajna and he went to Kimpurusha Varsha. Arjuna went to the northern Kurus. So that's all the way across. Mm-hmm. You know, so therefore when Arjuna went to the north, he went to the north. He didn't just, you know.
Prabhupada said that no one now has crossed the Himalayas.
Yeah.
someone like Arjuna could.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's also, it seems like by the map, the Himalayas are, the main portion of them is farther up. Oh, no, they're right here. Right. Oh, they are right here. Okay. Okay.
I don't believe they're crossing Himalaya.
Yeah, they wouldn't. So otherwise, how they get to King Purusha? Yes, so he went all the way to the Uttara Kurus. But they wouldn't let him in there. So it seems that he could go through all the others, but not. But and Gandamandana, that's where the Pandavas would always hang out. So that would be why it would be easier to get there by flying on the backs of Ghatotkacha. Because otherwise, it's a long way to walk. Yeah. But they would fly up to there. Yeah, it seems to be. Okay. Where are we? Srila Prabhupada comments. Another point in this verse is that all eight of these heavenly varshas, although men and women enjoy sex pleasure, there's no pregnancy. Pregnancy takes place only in lower grade life. For example, animals like dogs and hogs become pregnant twice a year, and each time they beget at least half a dozen offspring. Even lower species of life such as snakes give birth to hundreds of young at one time. This verse informs us that in grades of higher life than ours, pregnancy occurs once in a lifetime. On the planet Earth, however, human beings do become pregnant, although the tendency is to avoid having children. In this sinful age of Kali, people have even taken to the process of killing the children in the womb. This is the most degraded practice. It can only perpetuate the miserable material conditions of those who perform it. You know, because it's here, child is defenseless, takes shelter of the mother, and then the mother kills it, you know, claiming it's my body, you know. So the whole point is, but at the same time, is the body that the child in is their body.
Yeah.
So how is it you have your body has a right over their body? Huh? Yeah, but then how is that any less?
So you just find someone who's against who's even bigger than that woman. But then he's in charge of just about matter of bodily size.
Just keep getting bigger.
Yeah, who's the biggest? I'm pretty tall. I'm against.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so then it's not. It's that's the problem. Is that. They don't behave properly. One is they're becoming pregnant and killing the children because of lower consciousness. Right? If they had higher consciousness, they wouldn't be becoming pregnant, right? Because they wouldn't be engaging activities that they would make them pregnant. Right? Like that. So. Okay, so we'll stop here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Janatai Gaurav ki.